Bloomberg Audio Studios. Podcasts, radio, news. You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
It snowed all night in Washington. Not a fit night out for man nor beast, to quote the great W.C. Fields. They even put the Capitol Police in hotels because what is about to happen today must happen by the Constitution, the certification of the presidential vote. What's happening right now, a quick meeting on the House side, same for the Senate. They get together. Everybody says hello. And a little bit less than an hour from now, at 1 p.m. Eastern time, they will gavel in a joint session of Congress to get this job done. Now, a lot of us learned about January 6th 4 years ago. This is something that typically wouldn't even make the news until, of course, what happened in 2020. They're going to carry those ballots. Remember that? In the wooden boxes across the rotunda. They will count, they will unseal them, count them, and then certify them with the vice president who just lost the election presiding over the process. Again, 1 p.m. Eastern time. That's right. As the outgoing president of the Senate, it is Kamala Harris's job to preside over the count here. It is also apparently Kamala Harris's job, along with many other Democrats, to remind everyone today about what happened 4 years ago. Joe Biden had an op-ed this morning that you might have heard about. Kamala Harris took to a video to speak to people ahead of today's process, again, mandated by the Constitution. Here's the vice president.
Today at the United States Capitol, I will perform my constitutional duty as Vice President of the United States to certify the results of the 2024 election. This duty is a sacred obligation, one I will uphold, guided by love of country, loyalty to our Constitution, and my unwavering faith in the American people. As we have seen, our democracy can be fragile, and it is up to then each one of us to stand up for our most cherished principles.
Serious production values, multiple camera angles on the vice president. As I mentioned, Joe Biden writing an op-ed this morning in which he refers to what took place 4 years ago. Quote, "For much of our history, this proceeding was treated as pro forma, a routine act," he writes. "But after what we all witnessed on January 6, 2021, we know we can never again take it for granted," unquote. Glad to say that we have Maura Gillespie with us, who, of course, spent a good chunk of her career in the House of Representatives, a veteran of John Boehner's Speaker's office, founder, principal, BlueStack Strategies. Now she is a Republican strategist as the way forward. Maura, it's great to see you. January 6th is here, and I just wonder, before we get into the details, what's going through your mind today?
It's really an important reminder, I think, just for everyone. Whether you're Republican, Independent, Democrat, the peaceful transfer of power is a cornerstone of our democracy. And the very fact that it was, you know, obstructed in ways last time in 2021 should be jarring no matter which side of the aisle you sit on. Because when that happened and what the insurrection did, it is hard for me to put into words the feeling that I had watching this play out, knowing what was coming. And then watching it play out the way that it did, it's hard to really impress upon people how important it is to be objective. Because I think that if it wasn't Trump supporters who were doing this, and if it was, let's say it was, you know, Harris, Biden, people are out there today and we're storming the Capitol, those same Trump supporters would be furious and would be screaming from the rooftops that they should be all held accountable. And I think that then, again, having your objective hats on as opposed to your partisan hats on is going to be really important as we move forward. But marking this day and not forgetting what happened 4 years ago is incredibly important. And I hope people will take time to remember that.
Well, there's a lot of talk about whitewashing, right? What happened on January 6th. There has been a bit of revisionist history. Donald Trump calls it a day of love when he talks about this. We also know that he's promised to pardon the January 6th rioters, and there are a lot of them. I don't know if this is going to be an across the board. There have been questions about how Donald Trump would handle that, but more than 1,500 people were charged with crimes tied to January 6th. Nearly 1,000 have pleaded guilty. I'm guessing you don't think they should be pardoned. Maura, you can speak to that, but we heard as well today from the captain of the Capitol Police, who is not in favor, obviously, of seeing them pardoned. What message would that send if Donald Trump makes good on that promise?
It sets us up as a country for mayhem, because if you can't hold the people who, again, if you were one of those people over the summer who were furious at these college students who are breaking into buildings, bashing windows, and trying to take over their campus buildings, and you said they need to be held accountable, they should all be arrested, then you should have the same exact feelings about those who broke into the Capitol, beat down our officers, both Metropolitan Police in the D.C. area, as well as Capitol Police officers, to stop a proceeding that is, again, the cornerstone of our democracy. So you can't cry wolf at one thing and then turn a blind eye to the other. They're not on the same level, but if you're opposed to people breaking into buildings and smashing in windows, then you should think that they should be held accountable in the same ways. And so for President Trump to go ahead and issue a blanket pardons is, one, just a terrible look for our justice system. But two, I do think that there are certain cases that can be looked into. I'm not saying, I'm not opposed to that. I think our criminal justice system needs to be looked into. I think there are certain cases that can be looked into as far as how far their sentences go. But to issue a blanket pardon is so dangerous and sets a terrible precedent for our country moving forward.
Well, I'm guessing that Adam Kinzinger doesn't like the idea. You worked for the former Congressman Mora. Of course, he was on the January 6th committee. We don't know. Donald Trump has threatened to prosecute some of the folks, or all of them, who were involved in that investigation. Is there a place in the Republican Party for the Adam Kinzingers of the world, John Katko's, the Mitt Romney's of the world?
There is, if they want to be. My thing has always been, one, the idea about, not the idea, but what happened on January 6th, you can take a strong stance against that and say and call it out and say that it was wrong and say that it was a violation of what we stand for as a nation and for a democracy, and still believe in Republican policies and put forward ideas, conservative values, and still identify as a Republican. Again, I want to reiterate that what happened on January 6th, whether Republican or Democrat, should appall you, should truly be something that can never happen again. And that doesn't make you any less Republican by saying that, because, again, roles reversed. If a Democrat mob was coming to storm the Capitol to overturn the 2024 election, Republicans would be outraged. But again, on that day in 2021, it wasn't just Democrats being targeted. It was Mike Pence being targeted for the job that Kamala Harris is about to do today in certifying the election. It was all members were scared. Republican members were scared. The most MAGA Republicans were scared and hiding from the mob that day. So let's just remember that.
You're right.
That yes, there is a role for Republicans, like those who believe that January 6th was wrong, but also who believe in a smaller, more accountable government, who want to see our energy sector thrive, who want to see our grocery bills come down. We can do both. You don't need to, take away your own values and what you stand for to appease the Trump MAGA people. I just don't think that's the way forward for us.
I only have a minute left, Mora. If people should be appalled by what happened 4 years ago, should they not be inspired by what's about to happen today?
They should be very proud that our system stood that day in January 2021, and that it continues to thrive today because of adults in the room who are willing to do the job that they were tasked with, that they gave an oath to do. That is what we call leadership. And it's important that this continues on past this moment, past the Trump MAGA world moment, because our democracy has stood for almost 250 years, and I intend for it to continue on much longer past my lifetime.
Mora, it's great to see you. I really appreciate the fact that you could join us on this day. Good luck digging out of our snowstorm here in the nation's capital. Mora Gillespie, BlueStack Strategies. I will remind everybody that in the throes of the last couple of years here, we also covered the passage of the Presidential Transition Improvement Act. We'll talk about that a bit more. The idea was to prevent any possibility of what happened 4 years ago, watering down the role of the vice president and making it more difficult to object to what's going to happen. It is unlikely that either will matter, though. This is expected to go off without a hitch today, and we'll walk through it together, starting, as I mentioned, at 1 p.m. Eastern time. About 45 minutes from now, we'll begin the joint session of Congress. We've got a lot more ahead, only on Bloomberg.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, "Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130."
to someone who was in the Capitol 4 years ago. Former Congressman Dan Kildee, who used to represent Michigan, is here with us on Bloomberg TV and radio. Sir, thank you very much for your time. I would love if you could share with us just your reflection on how different this is 4 years ago to the day that you and your colleagues and members of the police forces were fearful of their lives at the time these proceedings were getting underway.
Yeah, obviously it's a completely different situation. Gratefully, it's different in some ways. I mean, I obviously preferred a different outcome in this past election. But as you can see, my colleagues, Democratic colleagues, who are disappointed in the outcome, disagree with the choice, are there to certify the will of the American people. 4 years ago, not only was there a mob sent by the then president, soon to be President Donald Trump, not only was there a mob that came to attack, but there were colleagues on the floor of the House of Representatives, a majority of the Republican members, who participated in this whole attack in many ways by validating the necessary precondition to the attack, and that is this belief that somehow the election was not valid. Look at what we're seeing right now. It's what democracy is supposed to look like, even when we disagree with the outcome. Personally, it's really tough because I can't even look at some of those colleagues that I served with in the same way after they contributed to what was really the closest we've come to losing our democracy in 150 years.
Congressman, it's good to see you as always. I'll remind everybody that you were on with us on January 6th, 4 years ago, and we went back and actually watched your interview with David Westin as we were just getting a sense of what was happening on January 6th, 2021. You talked about, to pick up on your point there, some of your Republican colleagues in the House that day, and you said, quote, "I will look at all of those who vote to look at these challenges when they know there's no factual basis. I will look at them differently," unquote. How do you look at them now?
Well, it's been tough, and I have come to a point where I've reconciled to the point where I can, at least when I was still in Congress until a couple of days ago, I could work with those folks, but I can't deny that I will always look at them in a different light. They hold a little less respect in my eyes than they otherwise would have. They hold less respect than those members of their own party that did vote to certify the election, despite the fact that they were disappointed in the outcome. And even some of those, who went even further and encouraged the insurrection. But I have to admit, I look at them in a different light.
Well, as we continue to keep our eye here on the House floor, a number of states' results have already been read aloud. To this point, there have been no objections. Again, no objections are expected today. No one is contesting these results. But, Congressman, we do realize that the proceedings today happen exactly 2 weeks before Donald Trump will take the oath of office and become the 47th president of the United States. And he has suggested on that first day, 2 weeks from today, he could issue pardons for many, if not all, of those who were convicted of crimes on January 6th, 2021. And I wonder, sir, what your thought is about that.
Well, it's very upsetting to me, both personally, because I was a victim of January 6th. I was one of those members that was trapped in the gallery and couldn't get out until those police officers were able to break through the line and get us out. It's a real slap in the face, I think, to those of us who were there, and we know what we saw and we know what we experienced. It's particularly a slap in the face to the Capitol Police. Above all, the Capitol Police stood strong and defended this institution, defended those of us who worked there against people who came there and did serious physical harm to many police officers. Five officers lost their lives at the end of it all as a result of the terrible experience that they went through. The idea that the President of the United States would pardon those people who committed a crime against this country because they happened to like him is a really frightening thought. I think it's something that will not go well in the annals of American history. This will be a dark day if he in fact does that.
If you're just joining us on Bloomberg TV and radio, it's the Monday edition of Balance of Power. We're spending time with former Congressman Dan Kildee as lawmakers go about their work of certifying the vote in the 2024 election. This is a live view of a joint session of Congress, the House floor. We've made our way up to Florida, Kaylee, as we work through the states, having unsealed the votes. They are essentially counting and qualifying them. We saw Congressman Brian Steil from Wisconsin, the chair of, there he is now, the administration committee. He and the ranking member are going through the process of making these official with each state. Congressman, as you watch this unfold, do you take heart today? Obviously, 4 years ago was a tragedy and a stain, I think, as we can all agree, on American history. But the fact that it's happening together today, on time, as mandated by the Constitution, with lawmakers working cooperatively, should we be inspired by what we're seeing now as opposed to 4 years ago?
I think we should be inspired and we should be grateful. We should be grateful that the people we put in office, at least on my side of the aisle, and I'm a former member, but I'm a Democrat and proud of that, that you're not seeing us do the same thing that we saw 4 years ago. And it does beg the question, and I think it's a good question to pose, what if the election had gone the other way? What would today look like if Kamala Harris had succeeded? Would those same representatives on the floor of the House of Representatives now, who are planning to vote to certify the election, how many of them would do what the Democrats are doing and follow the will of the people? I worry about that because, you know, obviously the election went their way. They're pleased. What if it hadn't gone their way? Look, Hakeem Jeffries said it the other day at his address to the House. Loving this country means you love it even when you don't succeed, even when you lose an election. Loyalty to this country is not something that you can pick and choose based on how you think the election should have gone. And I sure hope people have that in mind today as they think about the importance of this moment.
Well, and as you join us here on Balance of Power, sir, as a former member of the House, some of your former colleagues who have also left their positions in elected office looked into the events of January 6, 2021. I'm thinking of, for example, Liz Cheney, Benny Thompson, Adam Kinzinger, some of them Donald Trump has suggested should face jail time for the work they did on that committee. And with 2 weeks left to go of his presidency, do you believe Joe Biden should be issuing preemptive pardons to those individuals?
No, I'm not a fan of the use of presidential pardons at all, no matter what they're used for. I think it's authority that is antiquated, obsolete, and should be taken away. I just don't believe it. I have enough faith in the judicial system that if Donald Trump decides to make a mockery of it by pursuing charges against people who simply told the truth and sought the truth, I believe our judicial system, our justice system, we have to have enough faith in it that it would find those people innocent. I don't think preemptive pardons are advisable under any circumstance. And even though I would agree with the sentiment, I don't think it would be a good thing to do.
Pretty incredible story in Politico magazine today about Al Gore thanking Mike Pence for his actions of 4 years ago. They met at a Joe Lieberman memorial service over the summer. Congressman Mike Pence told Al Gore that he was inspired by what he had seen in 2001. "I never forgot it," Pence said to Gore, who replied, "You don't know how much that means coming from you." Of course, Al Gore was under a lot of pressure at that point by his own party to defy the Constitution following all the recounts and what was a pretty difficult time, if you're old enough to remember. Shouldn't we also acknowledge the fact that Democratic lawmakers have raised objections in this process that we're witnessing right now in the past? That's a bipartisan exercise, and it's separate from storming the Capitol.
It is. It's separate from storming the Capitol, for sure. But I think there is a clear distinction when an outlier or two within a party, for the purposes of calling attention to an issue, or sometimes to themselves, may have offered objections. But that's a far cry from the majority of a party, members of the House and of the Senate, taking the position that what they know to be a free and fair election should not be certified because they didn't like the outcome. So I've heard those comparisons before, and while they're technically there have been instances of this. It's a far cry from what we saw on January 6th. And I think it's a distinction with a big difference.
Sir, we're into the M's now in terms of the results reading out the states. Massachusetts has gone by. That does mean Michigan is going to be coming soon as Kamala Harris stands next to the House Speaker at the rostrum. Michigan, of course, one of the swing states, one of all of the swing states, which she lost. And I wonder, as we look ahead to 2026, to the day we will be experiencing 4 years from now, January 6, 2029, now that you are on the outside kind of looking into people competing for elected office, sir, what do you see as needing to change between now and then so that the next time they read out the results from Michigan, it's the Democrat who won those electoral votes?
Well, I think clearly we need to do a better job of communicating to people in terms they understand, not speak down to people, not speak in wonky policy terms. My advice to Democrats is that if you're having a conversation in a campaign, and if that conversation doesn't fit in a kitchen table discussion, you're having the wrong conversation. And I think sometimes we don't do a good job of getting out of our own way and just speaking to people on terms that they really do understand about the issues that they really care about, not sometimes the big macro issues, but those economic issues that families face. We didn't do a very good job of that. We need to do better, for sure. If we do, then I think the outcome of the election will be determined by that.
The Democrat from Michigan, former Congressman Dan Kildee. We could use you, Congressman, in Washington right now. We need a few folks who know how to handle snow. So let us know when you're back in town. It's good to see
you. Thank you.
Yes, you too. Yes, sir, of course. They've been plowing all night, Kaylee. It's still snowing here. There was some concern it was going to interfere with the proceedings, but enough lawmakers stayed in town over the weekend, and certainly Capitol Police stayed in town last evening, that this appears to be going off without a hitch.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
What will go down as a noteworthy day in history, though not for the same reason as 4 years ago. It's just the day that Congress did its constitutional duty and certified the electoral victory of Donald Trump as the 47th president of the United States.
Not a single objection. It was pretty remarkable. We were talking earlier with Dan Kildee about this. It's not unusual to hear objections. In fact, there were many Democratic objections, if you remember, in 2000, 2004, the situation with Ohio. The difference 4 years ago was the attack on the Capitol. What happened outside the Capitol? But today, to see none, no D's, no R's, everyone really wanted to make this neat and clean.
Well, and to make a point that this is how the democratic process works in the United States. It's a key pillar of the peaceful transfer of power that these results are accepted by a joint session of Congress, as they were indeed today. And of course, Democrats not losing the opportunity to make note of the contrast compared to how they view That's the conduct of their Republican colleagues.
Yeah, we heard Joe Biden in an op-ed, Kamala Harris in a video. It's an interesting day here in Washington. The contrasts could not be greater from 4 years ago. And as Rick pointed out, it's so quiet on the Hill because we've got a snowstorm.
Yeah.
I think maybe one flight got in today and Mick Mulvaney was on it. I don't know how this is possible, but he's with us at the table right now. The former Republican congressman, co-founder of the Freedom Caucus, former acting chief of staff in the Trump White House. Nice to see you. Happy New Year.
Wait, I still have my Christmas sweater on.
Well, you did pretty well, apparently.
No, I apologize for not dressing appropriately, but yeah, I'm just happy to be here in
this
weather.
And it's a snow day.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not a big snowstorm for most places that are used to snowstorms,
but
for this town,
it's enough to shut things down.
I think I was the only car on the road in from the airport.
You surprised there was no single objection today?
I was. Let's go back and play some of the audio tape and the videotape of folks of what they've said about Donald Trump over the last 3 or 4 months. I mean, Jamie Raskin, I mean, face it, the Democrats were openly accusing him of being the next coming of Adolf Hitler. That if we had voted for him, it would be the end of the democracy as we know it. That's not an exaggeration. That's not me using hyperbole as sort of spinning what the Democrats said about him. That's what they said, and they tried to convince people. I respect the fact that nobody objected. I think that's a good thing. And I think Democrats probably decided it was better for their brand long-term not to object. But the next time they go on TV and tell people, oh, this person is the next coming of Adolf Hitler, how are they going to justify what they just did?
Well, because I think this is an inconsistency. What the electorate voted for. All they did was say, yes, this is how people voted. That's not their vote.
I get that. But don't forget, what did Hillary Clinton said? Oh, remember, Hitler was elected, which he wasn't, by the way. So there's always that, if you really, really thought he was Adolf Hitler, would you vote to certify the election? I think the answer is no. If you really believed it, you would not. In fact, I wouldn't. If I really thought somebody was Adolf Hitler, I wouldn't vote to certify the election. So what I think you've just seen is, look, I applaud the way it went down today. It's the smooth transition of power. I'm a huge fan, and I think it was a class move today to do this. Mm-hmm. But it certainly undermines some of the hyperbole that they were using going into the election.
As we mentioned, we heard from Joe Biden in an op-ed, Kamala Harris in a carefully produced video presentation talking about her solemn duty, both of them going out of their way, though, to remind us of what happened 4 years ago. How should we catalog January 6, 2021? You've got Donald Trump on one side saying it was a day of love, and obviously you saw more than 1,000 people plead guilty to very serious crimes.
And we've talked about it before, and it's sad, maybe that's not the right word. If you think it was a peaceful protest, there's evidence of that. I mean, I remember seeing it. We've talked about this. I was in town. In fact, I was in the building that morning. I was at my condo in the afternoon, and I saw the people walking through the rotunda, and one person stepped across the velvet ropes, and somebody else grabbed them and pulled them back. So there were absolutely peaceful protesters, and if you want to say it was a peaceful protest, there's some evidence to that. If you want to say it was a violent insurrection, there is certainly evidence to that.
Yeah.
My sad, and I will use sad here, because I am really sad about this, is that we don't have any sort of common ground over what January 6th was. You've got, if you voted Democrat, you think one way. If you vote Republican, you think another way, at least for most folks. I wish we really knew what happened. And now there's evidence out, or excuse me, there's suggestions out that there were FBI people in the crowd. Is that right? I've heard allegations that the Democrats tampered with the evidence during the January 6th commission. Is that right? We don't know what the facts are. It's really hard to have an informed opinion about something if you don't have the facts.
Well, we do know people lost their lives both on that day and in the aftermath. There is video evidence of many of these individuals assaulting police officers. Should those people who are on video, some of whom have already pleaded guilty to these crimes, be pardoned?
That's a great question. Here's how I hope they deal with it. Look, the pardon power is a strange thing that we give to presidents. Mm-hmm. Why we give it to presidents, I'm not really sure. It's more of a king or queen type of thing. I hope that they go through it case by case. And if they do give pardons to some of the January 6th most violent offenders, let's say, that they look at it and say, okay, in this particular circumstance, let's use the sake of discussion, the jail time doesn't seem to meet the crime. Mm-hmm. Okay, that would be grounds for a pardon. It would be, people would look at the use of a pardon there and go, okay, that's an orthodox application of the presidential pardon authority. To come in and just say, it never happened, it was a peaceful protest, everybody gets off, I think that would be wrong. It happened. The day absolutely happened. And we have to figure out why it happened, what happened, and then make sure it doesn't happen again. And if you try and sweep it under the rug of history, I think that you're doing a disservice.
I'm sure you remember the way you felt.
Oh, I was angry. Unless I quit.
You resigned
over
this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still angry about the day. And if you're American, you should be angry about the day. Even if you're one of the people who thinks it was a peaceful protest, you can look at what you've just talked about, Kaylee, and say, look, but there were other people there who were not. And I'm angry about that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not unreasonable.
Do you think we could have seen a repeat of what happened 4 years ago today had Donald Trump not won?
You know, I get asked that question all the time, and I tell people I am the worst person to ask that question of because I didn't see it coming in the first place. Mm. I really didn't. And that's what frightens me the most about that day is that not only did I not see it coming, if you'd asked me, he said, Mick, if there'd be riots and a transition, I never would have thought it would have been my party, the Law and Order Party, that was involved with it in any fashion. Mm-hmm. So I am the wrong person to ask about what we might have seen today if the outcome had been different because I didn't see it 4 years ago.
In the postmortem that everyone's walking around the war room talking about Stop the Steal with Roger Stone, that was not every member of the administration. Otherwise, you would have been exposed to that in advance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was a minor member of the administration at the time, but yes.
Chief of Staff.
No, not that time. Okay. I was a special envoy to Northern Ireland.
Understood.
On January 6th.
Understood.
So yeah, I've been in Northern Ireland for about six, 8 months.
Good. Thank you for reminding us of that.
Yeah. Otherwise, I would have been involved in a lot more January 6 investigations than I was.
I suspect that's absolutely true. Talk to us about what's happening inside this transition right now, because they're trying to move beyond, obviously, the story that we're describing. And reading the interview today in Axios with Susie Wiles, the whole mantra is no drama this time.
Yes.
Is that possible?
Yes, it is. Is it? Would I bet on it?
Yeah.
No, I think it's... But you asked me if it's possible. It's absolutely possible. Mm-hmm. What she laid out in her Axios interview is exactly what you would want a chief of staff to lay out. It's textbook. It's absolutely perfect. The question is going to be, can she pull it off? Or is somebody, I'll use one of my favorite foils, Peter Navarro, mm-hmm. going to go out and start leaking to the press as soon as he doesn't get the answer that he wants in a White House meeting? He did it all the time. We all knew he did it all the time. If the president continues to, or allows that to happen this time, then it will undermine Susie's ability to run the building in the way she laid
but
out.
Stopping leaks is the key.
Well, it's just hiring people who buy into the fact you're on the team.
Okay.
John Bolton was never on the team. I'll beat up on Bolton for a second. I mean, John always thought that he was the president. And if Donald Trump decided something that went against what John Bolton thought he should do, John thought it was his duty to try and change that. And if he would go out and leak or do whatever to try and change the president's decision, that undermines the authority of the chief. It undermines the proper operation of a West Wing. Mm-hmm. So, no, if Susie's able to do that, and in order to do that, she has to get the buy-in of Donald Trump. Now, you asked me if it's possible. I said, yes. Why? Because it looks like it happened on the campaign. It really did. You have to imagine during that campaign, go back and remember, there were some really high points and some really low points during the 2024 campaign. And if she was able to sort of right the ship and keep things calm, quiet, and buttoned down during the good times and the bad, that's as good an indicator as to what it might be like for her running the West Wing.
In that interview, Susie Wiles also pushed back against the notion that these big accomplishments need to happen in the first 100 days. To summarize her words, she basically thinks that's an arbitrary deadline. But we do have questions about what will happen in, in the most immediate term when Donald Trump takes office, including how the reconciliation process is going to work, whether it's going to be one big, beautiful, powerful bill or two. This is what the House Speaker Mike Johnson had to say about yesterday.
We're 15 days out from the inauguration of President Donald J. Trump for his second term, and we want to make sure that we're jump-starting the agenda now over the next 2 weeks so that he's prepared and ready on day one. President Trump is going to prefer, as he likes to say, one big, beautiful bill. And there's a lot of merit to that because we can put it all together, one big up or down vote, which can save the country, quite literally. Reconciliation is the way to get it done. Why? Because you avoid a 60-vote threshold in the Senate. We're targeting a vote in the House, it may be in the first week of April.
So timeline is one thing here, Mick, but just how this gets done is another. He, Mike Johnson, others in the House have long been advocating for one big bill. Senator John Thune, the majority leader, wants two. Donald Trump, despite advocating for one bill in True Social over the weekend, in an interview with Hugh Hewitt this morning, said he's open to either. So how do you see this going down?
Well, Trump runs the place, right? And he should. Mm-hmm. He runs the Republican Party. They're in control of the town right now. So he gets to make those decisions. And if I'm Donald Trump, if I'm chief of staff to Donald Trump, why do I care if it's one bill or two? How do I get what I want? How do I get my agenda approved? If you tell me I get a better chance of doing that with one bill, yay, let's do one bill. If it's got to be 16 different bills, I'll do that. The question is going to be this as to whether or not one bill or two. It has to be one of those. It can't be 16 because they only get two shots at the reconciliation apple, right? Two bites at that apple. Do you gain votes by putting a bunch of disparate stuff together, or do you lose votes? Because keep in mind, I don't think they can lose any votes.
Well, and with your knowledge of the House, which do you think the answer is?
I mean, historically in Washington, D.C., the reason you get these massive bills that everybody says they hate is that that's what passes, okay? Mm. These omnibus bills. You're really talking about, for lack of a better word, an omnibus reconciliation bill.
Yep.
We're going to do immigration and tax and border and everything else all at one time, right? It's not a single issue bill. I think maybe they look at that and say, you know what? You might be a fiscal conservative and you might not like what the tax does to the deficit, but you really like the other stuff.
Sure.
And all in all, you'll vote for it. So maybe that's the logic.
Be very curious to see what the Senate parliamentarian thinks of all this when we do the bird bath.
The bird bath.
We'll have you come on to talk about it. But in our remaining moment or two, whatever we have left here, You're the chief of staff. You're the gatekeeper of the White House.
Chief of staff is not the gatekeeper, but no. Keep going. Keep going.
Okay. Some people describe it as such. You can give us a reality check on that. Is Elon Musk not the guy you're most concerned about right now because he's got the keys to the Oval Office?
No. I want Musk on the team. I mean,
he's out there freelancing though, isn't he?
Listen, if I can have one of the smartest people in the world who's aligned with me on many of my priorities, my legislative priorities, that's usually a good thing. Do you have to manage personalities? Yeah, but it's Washington, D.C. You guys know
that. The two biggest personalities maybe in the world.
People say all the time, oh, you know, when will they have their falling out? I don't know if they can afford to have a falling out. Huh. I really don't. I think they're both now, they're sort of tied at the hip. Trump can't afford to lose Musk, and Musk can't afford to lose Trump.
So they're married.
For the good part. What I think is, the thing that I put back my old OMB hat on, is I want to know when Elon Musk figures out that it's easier to go to Mars than it is to fix Washington. Because that's what he's trying to do with Doge. And I say that only half jokingly.
I get you.
That is the biggest task. I'm glad that it's getting attention. I'm glad that it's sexy all of a sudden. Everybody wants to talk about Doge. It's been a great marketing standpoint, great marketing campaign. We tried to do it in the first term, failed miserably. That was me. Donald Trump Elon Musk is a lot smarter than I am, so maybe he can pull it off. But if I'm Trump, I always want Musk on the team.
Wow.
All right. Mick Mulvaney, former acting chief of staff in the first Trump White House, former congressman from South Carolina, here with us in our Washington, D.C. studio on a snow day. Thank you so much.
Good luck
shoveling
out.
Have more ahead at 5 p.m.
A lot more to talk about. The vote has been certified. Join us at 5 p.m. Eastern on the fastest show in politics. This is Bloomberg. Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.